I'm John Batchelor, speaking with Professor Anne Higanay at Barnard College of Art History. Liberty, Equality, Fashion is her new book, The Women Who Styled the French Revolution. It is now the directory in Paris. I believe the year is 95, might be 96. The professor will help me. And Theresia, who has emerged from the terror and is now Madame Tallien, is holding a salon, as she usually does, gathering all the very well-spoken men of the directory and their hangers-on, men who were in prison and have now emerged. There's sort of a bond between everybody who thought they were going to be executed every morning and the people who learned from them what it was like. But the directory is very powerful. France is gaining money again. They were in Paris. And Theresia and Rose are pals, friends, and they're circling these men together. Remember, they need to find a way to get money. Women are not necessarily empowered to have their own finances in 1795. And in walks a Corsican in shoddy clothes. And Theresia gave him money, I believe, to help him dress better. Was he insulted by that?
We'll never know. He certainly was subjugated by her beauty and her style, so much so that he also became entranced with her best friend, who had less of the beauty, but just as much of the style. And that's the beginning of the legendary relationship between Napoleon and Josephine.
It's hard to believe it was a moment, but it's like the moment out of the prison. It happened. Everybody talked about it afterwards for years. Well, several centuries later, we're talking about it. Now, what's important here is why these women are becoming the center of interest of all these men. It has to do with style and with making necessity turn into fashion. That chemise that Theresia was wearing when she emerged from the prison, that was meant to be underwear, I believe, or some kind of nightgown. But Theresia and Rose, she's not Josephine yet, that's Napoleon's idea. Her name is Rose. Theresia and Rose see something else. What do they see of that gown?
Well, they knew that there were women in the world who wore plain white cotton dresses. The women that Rose had grown up with on the island of Martinique, where African-American women had developed the first style ecology that was not about the value of materials, but about how you styled humble cotton. And the two women realized that that was so much like the prison garb that Theresia had made romantically famous, that they could create a dress out of it. The fabric came from India. So it was an altogether colonial inspiration, but it passed as neoclassicism. It was just barely enough like neoclassicism for people to accept it. At the same time, as everyone was just stunned and amazed by how little these two women were wearing. One famous wit said of Theresia that no one was more expensively undressed.
The clothing industry is a major component of French wealth up to this date. As I learned from the professor, the guilds dominated fashion, and the people were dressed according to what are called sumptuary laws. For hundreds of years, it was assumed that as the sky is blue, sumptuary laws just were passed down from the Bible to us in some fashion. So women were not only wearing cages, stays, they called them, made out of whalebone and other severe elements, but you were only allowed to be tormented like that if you were in a certain class. If you stepped out of your class and wore clothes that were not appropriate, I learned from you, well, you were punished. Actually, you were just not accepted. So all of that, is that what was just swept away by the terror that the sumptuary laws, I believe they were already being ignored, Professor. Is that correct?
Well, like everything about the coming of the revolution, there were signs of resistance. And in some very marginal ways, women were beginning to resist the sumptuary laws that had governed what women wore since the 11 or 1200s and the authority of the guilds to make the clothes. However, right up until the terror, women continued basically wearing that sort of cage style clothing. It took not only the abolition of the guilds by the first phase of the revolution, but the collective trauma of the terror for anyone to begin to imagine that women could dress as differently as Rose and Theresia began to dress.
So what we're looking at here is the Graces, the three of them, and Juliet, remember now, is committed to her virginity because of the circumstances of her marriage. They're all three of them are wearing clothing that used to be never seen in public, and now it's being seen all the time. And it's important for us to discuss where, not only what it looks like, but what it's made of, because that becomes part of empire. That becomes part of the success. The book is Liberty, Equality, Fashion. The three women, again, to remind you, the Graces. They were called Graces in their own time and have been ever since. Theresia, who is Spanish origin, and Rose, who is Martinique, the colonies, and Juliet, who is Parisian and has three fathers. I know it sounds funny, but that's just the fact of the matter. And she married one of them, and she becomes a professional white-wearing virgin, a vision. And all of France, if I'd been a Frenchman in 1795, I would have known this just automatically, who these three women are. When we come back, what exactly made up the dresses and the accessories to their dresses, and where did they come from? Anne Higanay is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.